Today, on a special bonus episode of We Speak Common, we're going to have a quick overview of Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft and then talk about how to use it in your campaigns right now without having to start a new trip into the Domains of Dread. Welcome to We Speak Common. Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of the D&D podcast for everyone because, well, you know it, we speak common. It's just Ben here today for a bonus little thing. I say little, it's going to be about an hour long, I think, maybe even a bit longer. Look into Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft. It came out on Tuesday. I'm recording this on Friday morning. It is 8:15 in the morning, so it's the only time I could record. It's the only time I could fit it in, but I wanted to get this done. I've got all these things in my brain and that I need to say about this book, and I promised it would come soon. So here we are. I've got my cup of tea. I've got the two books that I want to talk about today. Two of them, one of them being Van Richten's, of course. Oh, that tea is good. And we're just going to get into it. So if I sound a little bit hoarse or a little bit groggy, it's because, well, I've only just woken up and not only just, but, you know, about half an hour ago. This is me. This is my life. I get up and I go straight into D&D mode. Phoebe loves it. So this is the show, of course, brought to you in partnership with the Dice Dungeon, who are amazing. They supply brilliant and what's the word that I'm looking for? Premium D&D dice, as well as D&D books now. I have a physical copy of Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft here in my hands, and that came from the Dice Dungeon. So if you haven't got yourself a copy, or if you want to get yourself a copy after listening to this episode, head over to the Dice Dungeon. There is a link in the description below. You can get 10% off your entire order using the code WeSpeakCommon. So make use of that, my friends. Of course, get yourself some dice too. I got finally got my set of Plain Shard Shadowfell dice. I'd had them on hold for a long time. I was like, just wait until the book comes out, I'll get them at the same time. And now that they are here and physically in my hands, oh my god, the pictures do not do them justice. They are so gorgeous. They are easily my favorite set of dice now. And I showed them to Phoebe because she was just as excited. And her thing about metal dice is that she sometimes gets afraid to roll them on the table because they're heavy. And she said, well, I love that they're so beautiful and so light that I'm not afraid of rolling them either. So if you want some dice that are as stunning and as premium, there's the word, as the metal dice, then the Plain Shard collection are the ones for you. Go and check them out. And Ben and Dave wonderfully threw in a little extra and sent Phoebe and I a bag of fates each, which was a lot of fun. If you haven't checked out this bag of fates, then you need to. They are like the joy of opening a booster pack of magic cards, but with dice. You don't know which set you're going to get. Some of the sets are sets that are available on the website to buy, and some of them are unique, never seen before, only for Bag of Fates. So you buy a bag, it's the cheapest way to get metal dice, and you never know what you're going to pull. I got the really clean and pristine bronze set, and Phoebe got a beautiful set that I've not seen before. And actually, I need to check the name with Ben and Dave. They are blue, and they have scales and gold numbering. Beautiful. I showed the boys the photos of the two and they said, yeah, Phoebe pulled the best set. So she won that time, but that's okay. I got my goodies. I can get over it. So go and check them out. The other partner of the show, of course, is Describe. I talk about Describe a lot. They are a really, really good service. If you love D&D, but are not very good at the written side of it, the creative side, then you can go to Describe and get over 1,500 crafted scenes written by creative writers, scenes that go for locations, spells, monsters, and there are tons of free ones. You can go and look at them now at Describe, DSCRYB.com. And then if you want the full collection, the full 1,500 that grows every week, you have to get a subscription. But you can get 10% off every single month if you use the code COMMON on your checkout. They're a great service, really good service, and they're adding new stuff every single time, to the point where you can even write your own scenes now. So go and check them out. They're flying. Okay, with that said and done, I'm going to take a sip of tea. Oh, that's good. That is good. And for the American audience, I mean like proper tea, you know, like hot tea, like tea bag, hot water from a kettle. And this one's got almond milk in it because I'm a vegan, but there you go. Don't come at me and tell me it's not proper tea. Leave me alone. Let's talk about Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft. This book, first of all, is beautiful. I've got the standard edition. There are a couple of books that I haven't liked the limited edition versions for. I've got limited edition versions of most of them. This one I just preferred. I wanted one with Strahd on the front because he's my boy. So yeah, I'm glad I got this one. It's really nice. And it's thick. It's a thick book. How many pages is this actually? 256. So it's a pretty good tome, to be honest with you. And it feels it. It feels thick and weighty when you hold it. Don't cover up. That's definitely something for innuendo bingo. The other book I've got here is The Dungeon Master's Guide, because there's some stuff in here that I think complements Van Richten's Guide really, really well. And I'm on the train of telling people to read it at the moment, so we'll get back into that. Before we dive deep into the content and we talk about how to use it now, because that's what this is about. This is how are you going to use this book right now in your existing campaign and adventure without having to go off and start a whole new campaign around the Domains of Dread and Ravenloft. I want to give you a kind of brief overview of what I think. So this is... I can't decide whether this is a player book or a DM book. I think, to be honest, it's a DM book. I've had a lot of people call it a player book, but it does have two subclasses in it. It does have three lineages rather than races. We'll get into those later. They are a different thing. But it does come with a lot of lore, a handful of monsters, and rules and things that you can use. Now, it's limited. There's not a lot of that. Like, there's not a lot of rules. And there's not a lot of monsters, but there's a lot of lore that I think works really well for the DM. I suppose you could use it as a player for creating characters that exist in the mists, but I don't know. I think it's a mix of the two. It's amalgamation. For me, it's got a lot of strength in that it talks a lot about session zeros. I mentioned this on the Patreon the other day, and someone said, oh, Tasha's does that though, but this is very specifically around content tools and how to flag something up during a game if a line is crossed, and how to set the boundaries for running scary and horror themed games. And I think that what it does there and the stuff that it says is very good. So I praise it for that. There's a lot of just making life at the table better for everyone. And it's good that that's put in words somewhere. It has a lot of lore on tons of domains. It's good lore. It's really interesting. It's fun to read. Some of it, I think, is a little bit lackluster. For example, the domain of Darkon has a few cities in it, and it doesn't talk about all of those cities. It mentions them, and some of them it does little paragraphs for, but they are just little paragraphs. It doesn't tell you like how many people live there or you know what the standard stuff going on is. For example, okay, so on the map for Darkon, and there are maps in here, I'm glad there are maps. Nartok is a city, doesn't have a little sidebar, doesn't have a little paragraph about it, whereas Martira Bay and Rivalis and Ilaluk, all of these cities, they do. So that's disappointing to me. It doesn't feel fully fledged. It feels a little bit underbaked. And they're not exactly what I would want. I like the way that the Explorer's Guide to Wildemount breaks down cities with population, commerce, trade, that kind of information. It doesn't do this. So I'm a little bit disappointed there. It leaves a lot up to the imagination. And that's a kind of a theme for this, for the lore and stuff. Similarly, it tells you about the Dark Lords, but it doesn't give you stat blocks for them, which I think it was a massive... I was going to say missed opportunity, but actually it just kind of feels a little bit lazy. For example, we know Strahd is the Dark Lord of Barovia, and yet there's no stat block for him in this book, even though there's already one in Curse of Strahd that could have just reprinted it. Similarly, Van Richten and a lot of the Van Richten family, as it were, are in this book. No stat blocks. They give you some suggestions of, oh, they use the spy stat block or this or that, but that doesn't feel very... It feels a little bit disingenuous to the characters. So I would have liked to have seen stat blocks around the Dark Lords and around the named characters that a lot of the lore is heavily pinned on. You know, if we can get every single Demon Lord statted in Tome of Foes, why can't we have the Dark Lords statted? Or at least some proper suggestion on what they should be. Sometimes it doesn't even say. So there's that. That's probably my main downside to this book, is that a lot of that stuff is just like, here you go, DM, off you go, make it up. Which is good for DMs like me, who have been doing it for a long time, but I think if you got into D&D and you're like, oh, I want to run a horror game, and you pick this book up, there's a lot left for you to do, and if you've not played D&D for a long time, that might be very overwhelming. There is an adventure in this book for levels 1 to 3. It's like a horror, funhouse, dungeony kind of adventure. I haven't read all the way through it, but it looks like it could be fun. It utilizes the rules around seances using Ouija boards and, or they call them spirit boards, I suppose is the correct term, and Taroka decks, which are in this book. So that's nice, a little adventure to get you kicked off. There is, of course, a big section on creating your own Domains of Dread and your own Dark Lords, and that is a very strong section. It has questions that ask you, you know, what does your Dark Lord think about this? How do they feel about this? What's their goal? What's their fear? The domain, how does it smell? How does it look? How, you know, all this stuff that helps with the conceptualization of the domain and the villain and all that good stuff. It feels like stuff that we have been talking about here on the podcast for a long time. So for me personally, and I think if Joe were here, we'd both be saying, well, that's nothing new. We've been doing that anyway. But for new people, I think it's just good that that kind of way of thinking is now in a published book, is in an official D&D piece of literature. I think that that's good. It's not a bad thing at all. So not groundbreaking for some of us here, but good to see. And it's a really good format to follow, I think. It really does get you thinking and get you moving the brain juices around. God, I sound like a mind flayer. But if you, like, for example, okay, so if you listen to last week's episode with Phoebe going through her, well, technically this week's, depending on when this comes out, when we were going through her adventure, and we said, oh, maybe it could be a Domain of Dread, literally reading through those, I was like, yeah, we can make that. And it helps conceptualize and put everything together. So I think those are really good. I think those questions, those systems are great. There are, of course, the lineages. I'm going to talk about those separately in a bit, but I think they're great. And I had a little jump for joy when I found that their Damfire did exactly what I did for my player when he asked me to be a vampire, so that was fun. They have lots of lore on named characters that walk around the mists. We'll talk about those later too. And then there are some rules at the back. And of course, there's the breakdowns of the different types of horror, which are great if you're like getting into horror for the first time. They call it the horror toolkit. So there's curses, which is... it's okay. It's like, here's how a curse would work. You've got to have the start, the middle, and the end. And here are some ideas of some curses. And it does give you some sample ones, which is nice. Then there's fear and stress as rules, which are, again, Fear is, you know, make sure if your players have fear, if they do something to show off that fear, give them advantage. Okay. Do that anyway. Stress is very similar. Stress is actually quite nice. Stress feels like a lesser version of the sanity rule. So you basically, various circumstances might cause a character stress. And if it does, you track it numerically. So when a character's stress score increases, it goes up by one, and then one of the following situations occurs, you know, when one of the following situations occurs, like a tense dramatic moment, or every 24 hours a character goes without finishing a long rest, or witnessing the death of a loved one, you know, standard stuff. Then when they make an attack roll or an ability check or a saving throw, they have to apply their stress score as a penalty. So they have to minus one if they've got one stress. And it's nice. And you can't just get rid of stress easily. It's not like, oh, I'll cast the de-stress spell. It's not remove curse. You know, it's not a heal and you're done. You have to spend an entire day relaxing or in otherwise calm circumstances, which of course would be defined by the DM, or calm emotions can suppress score for the spell's duration. Lesser restoration can reduce it by one. Greater restoration reduces it to zero. So if you've got access to those, then you can get around it pretty much. So it's all right. It's pretty cool. And then there's haunted traps, which are new versions of traps that aren't necessarily mechanical. They can have mechanical versions of them, but things like an area where the characters walk in and they feel the temperature drop by 10 degrees and then a ghost like swings out and attacks them, but it's not a ghost attacking them in combat. It's just like a trap. And there are some examples of those. Those are nice. The next thing is survivors. They are like mini player characters. And the idea is that you use them for flashbacks or for horror-themed games where you want to feel a bit more realistic and non-magical and not fantasy. They are interesting. They can go up to three levels. They're not really levels. They call them levels, but they also say that they're not like levels like a player character. So there's a magic one. There's a faithful priesty one, there's a sneaky one, and there's a squire who is kind of like a combatty one. And they have stat blocks. So you could run a game tomorrow with someone on just using these stat blocks, and that's pretty cool. And when they level, they take traits rather than, or talents they call them, but they're like traits from stat blocks. So they're pretty cool. They'd be an interesting thing to use for like a death house in Curse of Strahd, the side adventure, if you had an adventure like that where you were just a few levels and it was in a house and kind of like the House of Lament, which is the adventure in this book, they would be fun to run through that because they would make it tougher as well. They're not player characters, they're not as strong. But yeah, so there's that, and then there's the adventure, which I haven't read through all the way through, but it looks pretty cool. It looks like a nice little adventure. And then you've got the stat blocks. And in terms of stats, there's not many. They're fun. There are some good things in here. There are some interesting creatures in here and really creepy stuff. But you get, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. This is fun for you, isn't it? 31, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 30, 32 creatures. So it's not bad. It feels quite short in the book, though. It feels shorter than that. But they're interesting creatures. For example, the body taker plant, like Day of the Triffids, and the gallows speaker, you know, the Nosferatu. There's some cool stuff in here. And there's more Starspawn, which is great. So yeah, so that's a quick overview. I think for me, a quick overview, it took me like 15 minutes. I would say it is underbaked. That's my overall kind of feeling. It's good. There's good stuff in here, and there's enough in here for you to get the brain juices going, start thinking of a campaign, whether it's in the Domains of Dread or whether it's to use in your own campaign. It gives you enough to do that. It gives you fun new monsters and some interesting rules to use, and it gives you some cool NPCs, but it expects you to do a lot of the work. That's what I feel. I mean, I don't think others feel that way. I don't think everyone feels that way, but that's how I feel. I feel like there's an expectation for you to flesh out the domains even further and build the Dark Lords. And for example, when it goes through all the conceptualization of your own domains and your own Dark Lords, it doesn't tell you anything about like statting them, which I suppose the answer would be, well, go to the DMG, the rules are there. But it would have been nice for there to be a bit of guidance, because the book is about that. The book is about making Dark Lords and domains. So that would have been nice. I think the subclasses are great. We'll probably talk about those another time, but they look like fun, and the lineages look like fun too. So that's good stuff. Out of 10, I'd probably give it a 6 or a 7 at most, probably a 6.5 at most. I would say if you like Ravenloft, if you like the ideas of the Domains of Dread, get this book because you will get a lot out of it. If you're a player and you just want the subclasses and the lineages, maybe just buy those separately on D&D Beyond if that's what you use. If you're a collector, you're going to get the book anyway. So what can I say? But yeah, I want to make it clear that I do like this book. I'm just a bit disappointed that there could have been a bit more in it, but that's all. Otherwise, I think it's great, and the art is beautiful, and it does do a really good job at inspiring you to make your own stuff and build upon what's in here. I'm going to take a quick sip of tea. Can you hear me swallowing? That's gross, isn't it? Okay, let's talk about how we're going to use this in our adventures right now. Because this is the thing. These books come out, and I do it, and I know others do it. You look through it and you go, oh my God, I want to run a Domain of Dread now. But my adventures are running through the jungles of Chult, and I don't have time to put in another game. Fear not, my friend. There is plenty you can do. Let's start with the subclasses. You can obviously allow your players to change into them if they want to. You've got the Warlock of the Undead and the Bard College of Spirits. The College of Spirits Bard seems really cool. That's my favorite. You can definitely allow that. The second thing you can do is utilize the lineages. So in this book, rather than new playable races, we have lineages. And here is how I think... this is what I think they're doing. They never really define what a lineage is. I mean, they might do. I don't think they do. I'm going to have to flick forward to it now to make sure I am speaking the truth. Oh, I've gone too far. Bloody Nora, Ben. You would have thought you... that's the most British thing I've ever said on the podcast. Would have thought you knew what you were doing. Where are we? Oh, there are backgrounds in here as well. There are quite a few bits of character creation. But the backgrounds, one of them's a reprint from Curse of Strahd anyway, so... here we go. Lineages. Right at the start of the book. Page 15. So, here's how I define lineages, and I'm not sure whether they actually do that in here. So they say, consider an origin that ties you to a grim progenitor or inexplicable experience. Lineages can serve as your character's race or overshadow your previous race. So they are different from races, and here's how I would define it if your players don't really get it or if you're struggling to get it. You have a race, right? That is your race. You're an elf or you're a goblin or whatever. A lineage is something that then alters that race at a later date. You can be born as a lineage, you can use a lineage as a race if you want to, but if you... Good morning, people texting me. You're up early. But if you use it in its, like, I'm going to say traditional sense, if we look at the Damnfire, for example, a lineage is something you get when an event happens. So for the Damnfire, if you get bitten by a vampire, you can turn into a Damnfire, which is going to be the player version of a vampire. So that's how I am putting lineages in my brain. They're not races. They are the next step on something that takes over your race at a later date, or just takes over your race entirely from level one, if that's what you want to do. So the three you get are Damnfire, which is basically playing a vampire. I think it's great. I think it's not too strong. Like, it doesn't feel like they've gone, oh, they're a vampire, they have to be really, really strong now. It feels like they've really thought about the balance of it. You get you don't get the undead type because you're not technically undead. You're not like a full vampire. You are still a humanoid, so that's interesting. You get dark vision, you get deathless nature, so you don't need to breathe, so you kind of are undead, but you're not an undead. You get spider climb, you get vampiric bite, and your walking speed is 35 rather than 30. Then we've got Hexblood, who are like these, they are fey, so if you've ever wanted to play a fey before and you're not playing an Eladrin, this is the way. You make a bargain with a being. It seems that they like to pick hags as the main way of becoming a Hexblood, but you can do it with any kind of fey. And you basically become a fey. You have dark vision. You have this eerie token, which is like a crown that shows that you're a Hexblood. You have telepathic message and remote viewing, and you have cool hex magic. So you can do stuff like pull off a fingernail and give it to someone, and then always talk to them if they're holding your fingernail, or always view your fingernail. So I can foresee a situation where a Hexblood is in a dungeon and they're like, oh, we need to see around that corner because there might be a beholder in there. So they pull off their tooth and throw it into the room and then view it through their hex magic, which is really cool. They're really interesting. And then the third one is the Reborn, and that is, again, you're not undead, you are a humanoid. You have been brought back to life for some reason, or you have a reincarnated spirit and you have lost memories. Those are the kind of themes. And they give you some origins and some lost memories to throw into your character creation. You get Deathless Nature, which means you have a load of things, actually, like advantage on saving throws against being poisoned, resistance against poison, advantage on death saving throws. You don't need to eat, drink, or breathe. You don't need to sleep. You just have to like rest for 4 hours, much like the elves. And you have knowledge of the past life, so you can like remember glimpses of things. So they're really interesting, and I think the best way to use them right now is if you're running in a campaign and your players get bit by a vampire, great. Have them make a save. If they fail, tell them they are now a damnfire. And the book gives you rules on how to take your race that you're already playing and change it into the damnfire. So for example, let me just find it here. It also tells you like damnfires in the Domain of Dread and stuff like that, so you can use them in the domains. But here we go. Ancestral Legacy. If you replace a race with this lineage, you can keep the following elements of that race: any skill proficiencies you gained from it, and any climbing, flying, or swimming speed you gained from it. You don't keep those elements, or you if you don't keep any of those elements, or if you choose the lineage at character creation, you gain proficiency in 2 skills of your choice. So it tells you how to alter your current race into the new, and it does that with all of them. So you can use these as character development, which I think is great, and I would love to see more of these. Like, imagine a lycanthrope lineage. Great. Now your players can be werewolves. Really fun. Really, really fun. I'd love to see more of these. Cool. You can use those straight away. The next one as well is, of course, the Dark Gifts, which exist in this book. There are a ton of them in here. There's also a kind of guide on, like, it gives you ideas on how to make your own. So if you want to start using Dark Gifts and start foreshadowing the Mists of Ravenloft, or maybe you've got a player making a bargain with a fey or an undead overlord or something, maybe they can give a Dark Gift. That's a lot of fun stuff too. So that stuff obviously is really easy to use right now. And I would encourage it. I think it's just going to bolster out your experience. At the back of the book, we've got a ton of stat blocks. All of these, I think, can be used right now. For example, I am running Curse of Strahd. There's tons of zombies and undead in here that I can throw in. No, I'm not running Curse of Strahd. What am I saying? I am running Tomb of Annihilation. There's tons of undead and zombies that I can throw into the jungles of Chult. And I suppose if you are running Curse of Strahd, there's loads of undead and zombies that you can throw into the forests of Barovia. So there's that. There's fun things like swarms of maggots and stuff. And there's like the carrion crawlers in here. Unspeakable horror, like just creepy stuff that you can put in. Vampiric Mind Flayer, if you just want to change something up a little bit. Like, there's stuff in here that you can just throw in to shake the box a little bit and surprise your players. But the real cool stuff that I think you could really use in your own campaign, and you can use this in 2 ways. You can either use this to foreshadow the Domains of Dread coming up in the future if you plan to go that far, or you can use them to just broaden your world's reaches. There are characters and there are organizations within this book who are Mistwalkers, who are investigators, people who travel between the mists of Ravenloft, the mists of the domains, to research them and to, you know, experience everything that there is in there and write it all down. And of course, one of those is Van Richten. But then you've got the Van Richten family. So let me just get this page up here. Okay, so you have, for example, and I'm going to butcher these names, so bear with me. Alanic Ray and Arthur Sedgwick. The Caller, he's a very domain heavy. You have Van Richten's son, which is Erasmus Van Richten. His name is hard to say in the morning. Ez Divenir, who is another investigator. God, who else have we got? Oh, my favourite one is, well, okay, Rudolph von Richten, obviously, but you've got the Weathermay Foxgrove twins. They're really cool. Larissa Snowmane. These are all people who could be used in any number of ways in your campaigns. They could pop up at any point because they travel through the mists. And the mists, of course, have a way of controlling where people go, but there are also ways to control where you go with things like mist tokens to get from domain to domain. So you can give them ways to appear in any world. There is talk about, there's a link to Eberron in here somewhere with the mists. And I don't technically know how that works. I can't remember where it is, but I know that I read it. I think it's one of the extra domains potentially that, because there's the domains that are really written about, and then there's ones that are like extra. And they aren't, they're just like paragraphs, and it's like, here you go, you can use these if you want to. One of them is around Cass, as in Vecna and Cass and that whole story. So that's fun. But there's one that links to Eberron. And I don't know how that works, because Eberron is like its own thing, right? It's not part of the greater D&D cosmology. Here it is. It's Career 1313, the Morning Rail. And then there's even this big picture of it, right? This big art. And it's it says, you know, the disaster known as the Morning numbers among the greatest tragedies to befall the world of Eberron, a mysterious calamity that killed nearly everyone in the land of Kyrie. I never know how to say the Eberron land names. I'm really sorry. The nation's capital. Some citizens foresaw the coming devastation and sought to escape upon lightning rails, elemental-powered engines capable of pulling trains of passenger carriages. So it's like, I think the idea is that it's a train that's come through, and that's a domain. The domain is the long train, the lightning rail. But the fact that Eberron is connected to the domains of Dread is a bit weird. And like, does that, are they bringing Eberron into the greater cosmology? But how does that work with Eberron's cosmology? So let's not get into it, but you know, you could have these characters, is what I'm saying, appear in any world at any point, because the domains of Dread's kind of connect the worlds like the planes do. I mean, it's part of the Shadowfell, so you know, use that to your advantage and have these characters pop up. Have von Richten appear using the voice of the client, you know, Werner Herzog. That's what I do, that's his voice for me. Have these children of von Richten. They're not actually a family, they're like people who have trained with him, and he's they're his friends. They become the von Richten family. And there's a lovely letter in this that says, you know, you can use my name. Have them appear and foreshadow von Richten's appearance, make him this big, important investigator, vampire, monster hunter, and have them appear in your campaigns. Doesn't have to be connected to Means of Dread. Have them as monster hunters in your worlds. They travel the world, so they are renowned as monster hunters. That would be really cool. Similarly, there are loads of organizations. So, for example, there's a big whole write-up and expansion on the Keepers of the Feather, who, if you're familiar with Curse of Strahd, you will know. You can have them appear in your campaigns. Of course, the Vistani as well. They are, by nature, travelers. And so they move through, they travel through the domains, but they also have the unique ability to come and go from the domains of Dread. So have them appear in your world, and doing that will just open up and the scope of your world, because suddenly there's another culture there, and where did they come from, and where is this far off land that they call Barovia? It just tightens things for the players. And it talks about the different types of Vistani, and talks about the controversial Madam Ava, who helped and made a deal with Strahd, and how the other Vistani sort of think that that was wrong, but hey, it means that they're always safe within his domain. So, you know, they think it was wrong, but they kind of benefit from it. Then you've got other groups. So you have the Church of Ezra. Ezra is an aloof god who embodies the mists. So it's that I've got a feeling it was a she, because they talked about long hair and like a female kind of visage, but I'm going to say they just to be safe, because they're a god, you never know. Ezra is the god of the mists. So they are this god that people within the domains worship, but no one else really knows about. Like, Ezra hasn't really isn't a god outside of the mists. And it's kind of weird that, I mean, the domains, the dark powers within the domains are, and always have been, left up as this kind of unknown entity, kind of like cosmic horror kind of entity. Like, you don't know what they look like. You don't know what they want. You don't know what they do. I mean, you kind of know what they do. They pull bad people in and they give them prisons. But they're also, they're not good and they're not evil either. So it's like, they'll torment you as well as the Dark Lords, and like, they'll bring the Dark Lords back to life all the time, so that, oh, the whims of the Dark Lord, the Dark Powers, oh, they've brought Strahd back again. I think I've said that many times. So it's kind of like that. They are, the Ezra is this god with no, like, you could use them however you wanted, really. It says here, with no domain spanning or organization, the church serves largely as a formalization of local superstitions, whether in modest rural temples or urban cathedrals. When many common folk give voice to their hopes or seek a ward of to ward off evil, it's to Ezra they play. So it feels like a god that you can really throw into the domains if you're using them. But hey, use it outside of the domains too. Build on it. Use it in your own world. Give the domains a place in your cosmology. Then we've got the Circle. They are heroic knights who so I love this. Heroic knights of this order quest from the Shadowlands in search of evil to vanquish. So if you've got a paladin heavy player, the Circle could be like this cool organization they want to get into. And again, they could travel outside of the mists if you wanted to. The Khagrat and the Khagrate, or Khagratan, I don't know how you say the other version of it, but they are a secret police specifically in Darkon, but you could take that and manipulate it and use it in your own campaign. The Order of the Guardians, they are scholars and mosaic caretakers that hunt down and put an end to dangerous supernatural objects, cursed items, and stranger anomalies. The Order of Guardians could be anywhere. They do not have to be just in the Domains of Dread. If you want some occulty kind of organization within your world, like Orlo, my wizard, he kind of is that character. He wants to find out everything about magic, and when he finds something evil, he's like, oh, I want to learn about it. I won't use it. I want to learn about it because I want to know about all this occulty stuff, and then maybe I'll lock it away and hide it, and I won't tell anyone about it. Which is interesting because he's allied himself with a group who want to share information because he benefits from it. But you could use the Order of the Guardians in that sense. There's the Priests of Ozybus. They are cultists that channel the might of the dark powers and steal souls to gain the ability to transcend death, which is awesome. And they are within, I think, I don't know if they're in the stat blocks, but you do have in here stat blocks for, oh yeah, you do, Priests of Ozybus. And then you get later on Inquisitor of the Tome, the Sword, and the Mindfire, who you could use in that kind of role. And then you have the Olmist Inquisition. That's who they are. So you could mix those two together if you really wanted to make your own version of these guys. They are, well, there's three branches of them, which is the Tome, the Sword, and the Mindfire. They are psionic in a way, and they stamp out evil. But their zeal and willingness to peer into others' minds mean that many fear them just as much as the villains they oppose. So there's that. So there's all these organizations and these mist wanderers, as they call them, who you could use in your campaigns right now. And I would encourage you to. And I think if you're looking for something to broaden the horizons of your world, that's what this book offers here, especially in these chapters. So that's my advice. Use those. Put monster hunters in your world because it's fucking dope, man. Fucking dope. But yeah, I think that's a pretty good overview. I suppose we should talk about the domains. I've read through most of them and then flicked through the others. I read through Barovia and Ravenloft itself, it's kind of just everything from Curse of Strahd. I think if you're buying this book for Barovia, just buy Curse of Strahd and run that. If you've never run Curse of Strahd and you've got extra money to spend, get this book along with it and build on it, because you could put a whole adventure line of Azalin within Strahd, which is really cool. Azalin is the Dark Lord from the domain Darkon, which is a really cool domain because it's falling apart because Azalin isn't there. And it's a good example of a domain that's like, great for a DM who knows what they're doing, because it's like, here's this setting with a little bit of information, and here's all this setup of things. Like, there's a castle that's exploded and it's like floating and hanging in the air. Tells you no idea how you would run that. But if you're in Darkon, you want to go there, right? You want to go to a castle that has towers that are floating and perpetually falling in this strange, eerie light. But there's no idea, no information on what's there or how to run it. There's a little bit on what's there, but not creatures or anything like that, or how to run it or anything like that. So it's like, here you go, DM, have fun, make it up, off you go. Build this domain out for your adventure. And here are some potential small adventure hooks, but nothing campaign arc wide. You know, and here's a Dark Lord that's not there anymore, but why? We don't know. Up to you. Great. I could create a really cool adventure in Darkon. But a new DM, maybe not so much. That's kind of how I feel. I feel a bit like, oh, you've left the new guys out a bit. But there you go. Does that. Aslan's really cool, and he could be anywhere, or he could be dead. It's up to you. I would like him to be somewhere. He's a really cool lich. You've got Blutspur, which is the Mind Flayer, Cosmic Horror, God Brain place. Then, of course, you have Borka, which is really cool. They all have different themes, and obviously they all eat into the different types of horror, cosmic, folk, body horror, like all these different types of carnival. It tells you as well, so it says like the carnival, body horror, and dark fantasy. The carnival's cool because it's the only domain that like travels to other domains, because it's a carnival that moves around. There's cool stuff in here. There's a wizardy kind of place. Which one was it? Hang on. Folknovia is very cool. I mean, a lot of these people know if they've been playing D&D for a while, because they've been extended over time. Here it is. Here's the wizard one. The wizard one is Haslan. Domain doomed by magic, dark fantasy, and disaster horror. So that's really cool. Yeah, I mean, there's some great stuff in here, and you could take any of them and expand them and make them something more. And there's bits of D&D history in here too. So for example, if you listen to the Strahd von Zarovich episode, we talked about how, you know, he came from the Ravenloft book, Tracy Hickman and the other name, who I always forget, which always makes me feel awful, created. And then their sequel to that was, I don't know whether it was called Ravenloft 2 or Return to Ravenloft, House on Griffin Hill. And there's a whole thing about that in here, because the House on Griffin Hill is within one of the domains. It's really cool. There's some really cool stuff in here. The reason I wanted to bring up Dungeon Master's Guide really, really quickly towards the end of this episode, and how you could definitely start using this right now, is that in the back of the Dungeon Master's Guide, in I believe what is part 3, part 3, Master of Rules, when you get to, not chapter 8, that's running the game, but chapter 9 is the section for like the DM's toolkit, or whatever they call it, the extra rules and stuff, where the potions and madness and all that stuff are. Dungeon Master's Workshop, that's what it's called. There is sanity, and I think sanity could work really well in this kind of dark horror book. So I think if you're going to run a campaign based on the Domains of Dread, and you're going to go full in the horror, and you're going to use the stress and fear rules, consider looking to the Dungeon Master's Guide for page 264, 265, new ability scores, honor and sanity. I'm going to ignore honor right now. We're going to talk about, sanity. Consider using sanity score if your campaign revolves around entities of an utterly alien and unspeakable nature, such as the Great Cthulhu, whose powers and minions can shatter a character's mind. Works really well for the domain of Blutspur, with the Mind Flayer domain, with the God Brain. A character with a high sanity is level-headed, even in the face of insane circumstances, while a character with low sanity is unsteady, breaking easily when confronted by eldritch horrors that are beyond normal reason. You might ask characters to make a sanity check in place of an intelligence check to recall lore about the alien creatures of madness featured in your campaign, to decipher the writings of raving lunatics, or to learn spells from tomes of forbidden lore. You might also call for a sanity check when a character tries one of the following activities: deciphering a piece of text written in a language so alien that it threatens to break a character's mind, overcoming the lingering effects of madness, comprehending a piece of alien magic foreign to all normal understanding of magic. You might call for a saving throw when a character runs the risk of succumbing to madness, such as the following situations: seeing a creature from the Far Realm or other alien realms for the first time, making direct contact with the mind of an alien creature, being subjected to spells that affect mental stability, such as the insanity option of the symbol spell, passing through a demiplane built of alien on alien physics, or resisting the effect conferred by an attack or spell that deals psychic damage. Failed sanity saves might result in short-term, long-term, or indefinite madness, as described in Chapter 8, running the game. Anytime a character suffers from long-term or indefinite madness, the character's sanity is reduced by one. A greater restoration spell can restore sanity lost in this way, and a character can increase his or her sanity, there we go, through level advancement. So basically, it creates another ability score. Another way I've seen it done is to have a like a score that goes only up. So you start with zero, and every time you come under stress or something that questions your sanity, you make a sanity saving throw. And then if you fail, the score goes up by one, and the higher up it goes, the more disastrous it gets. And if you get to like the highest number, you just die. So there are different rules out there. Consider looking those up. Consider using sanity in the way the DMG offers it. I mean, it's a little bit, it's not very robust. That's the best way of saying it in the DMG. So I would build on it. But I would absolutely consider putting it in the game if you're going to run a full Domains of Dread horror adventure. Okay, I'm going to sneeze in a minute. So I don't want to do that on the microphone. So we're going to end it there. I think it's a good book. And I think that if you're considering getting it as a DM and you've got the spare cash, go for it. It's definitely going to help you. I think if you want to use horror in your campaigns, or if you want to be a bit more creepy, definitely get it. I think if you want to run Domains of Dread, definitely get it. If you are thinking about which book to get next, and you've not been playing for very long, it might not be the best option. Consider the others, depending on what you have and haven't got on your bookshelf already and what you're running. But it's definitely something to get in the long run, because there's lots of cool stuff that can be used outside of the Domains of Dread in here. And I think that what we've talked about today really only just touches the surface of that. Right. I don't know why I'm so like bunged up today. I don't know where this has come from, but there we go. You get to listen to my lovely voice early in the morning and full of cold. I think I've said everything I want to. I would love to talk more about this book and how I am going to use it, because I will start using it as of tomorrow with my session in TOA, should the opportunity arise. So come chat to me on Twitter at WeSpeakCommon, at BenJFNorris. You can email WeSpeakCommon@hotmail.com. We're on Instagram at WeSpeakCommon. And if you really want to get involved in the conversation, you can support the show through Patreon and come and join our exclusive Discord server. There's a bunch of us in there now. And actually, what we are doing right now, thanks to a suggestion from one of the Patreons, we have a channel for the, we call it the Encounter Builder, where if we're talking about a monster on the show or in Legends and Lore, we're all going to team up together and build an encounter around it to use in our games. And in the meantime, when we're not doing that, we're just helping each other build really cool encounters. So for example, we kicked it off yesterday by building a really cool encounter around Nosferatu, a special vampire inside Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft, where some of the ideas, I just kind of sat back and watched in awe, loved it. They're talking about a building where you players have the ability to make the roof come down so sunlight can come in, and looking like a pool of blood that the Nosferatu can pull characters into. So yeah, really cool stuff. If you want to get involved with that, there's a link to the Patreon in the description below and on our Twitter and social medias. Have a great day, enjoy throwing horror at your players, and remember to read all the stuff about being good and using content tools and stuff too, because those are fantastic. Nice. All right. Go and order your Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft from the Dice Dungeon and use WeSpeakCommon to get 10% off. See you later. Thanks for listening today. If you like the show, do us a favour, leave us a like and review on your platform of choice, and share us with your friends. Send us to your fellow DMs and players so that we can build our community even more. It really helps to get us out in front of more eyes.
If you want to support the show, you can by joining our Patreon. Links can be found in the show description and the episode descriptions on all platforms. The music in the podcast is Street Dancing by Timecrawler82. It's licensed under a Creative Commons license by NC. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.